Both randomized control trials and observational studies have been used to assess the effectiveness of vaccines, but observational studies are often dismissed as lacking the methodologic rigor necessary to inform policymaking and regulatory decisions. I'm Stephen Morrissey, managing editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, and I'm talking with Arnold Montauk, a professor emeritus of epidemiology and of public health, and co-director of the Center for Respiratory Virus Research and Response at the University of Michigan School of Public Health. Dr. Montauk has co-authored a perspective article about the value of various methods for studying vaccine effectiveness. Dr. Montauk, how have regulators in the United States traditionally regarded evidence from various types of studies when they're evaluating vaccines?
When regulators such as the FDA examine data so that they can license a vaccine, the sponsors typically have carried out a randomized control trial, or maybe even two randomized control trials, depending on the product and the regulations, which are used to make sure that the product, let's say a vaccine, is working as expected and at the level that is required in terms of efficacy to be licensed. But that is only the start, because we never know how well a product will work in the real world when we go to people who do not necessarily volunteer to participate in these trials.
You say in your perspective article that respiratory viruses, especially influenza, present particular challenges for vaccine research. What factors complicate research and vaccine development in that area?
Well, a couple of factors. First of all, in the United States, we now have a universal recommendation, and typically the most rigorous clinical trials use a comparator, which is placebo. And we couldn't do that in the United States now because of the recommendation. It would not be ethical. The other reason that flu vaccines present an issue is that we update the vaccine each year, and the recommendations come in typically from WHO in February, and the FDA meets in March, and we couldn't conduct randomized trials to meet the necessity of having the vaccine available the following September. So there are logistic challenges.
So, getting back to the ethical issue you raised, what strategies have investigators developed for maintaining rigor in trial design while they don't violate ethical constraints, given the pre-existing recommendations for vaccination?
One of the ways that this is handled is the setting up trials against an active comparator. In other words, if you are trying to figure out how a new preparation works, you will compare it in a randomized design with another product which is already licensed. This happened recently with the new mRNA influenza vaccines, where the comparator was the regular vaccine. Now, there was a problem with this because the comparator, which was regular vaccine, is not the comparator which needs to be used in 65 plus individuals. So they're going to be doing another study with a less rigorous but still a randomized design with a different comparator. And that's the kind of issue that you get into. There's no black and white in this. There are shades of gray, and that's one of the reasons why we need to examine evidence from different kinds of studies.
One analytic method you describe in your article is the prospective test negative design. How does that approach work, and how has it been used in influenza research?
The test negative design has been used both in influenza work and with other vaccines, including the COVID vaccine most recently. And the way this works is you take a population, let's say people coming to the clinic for a respiratory infection that meets a case definition, and then you test whether they are positive for, let's say, influenza virus or negative for influenza virus. You then go and see whether they have been vaccinated or not, And you can use those data to come up with an effectiveness outcome. Now, the reason you use this design is that if you just went to the general population, not people who have a specific illness, you might get bias entered because, let's say, the healthier people are more likely to get vaccinated, paradoxically, because they're more mobile and they can get in to see the doctor more easily and go and get vaccinated. So this controls for the kind of bias that you have to avoid when you use the observational studies.
And have those test negative studies been adequate for approval of influenza vaccines, COVID vaccines?
They aren't used for approval, but they are used to get an idea of how well vaccines work on a yearly basis. We have an issue with influenza because the virus changes, and we are working out the best kind of vaccine to be used so that we can examine on a yearly basis how well the vaccine is working. And here we're comparing results in 1 year with a virus that has changed with another year where the virus hasn't changed. And we combine this with molecular techniques. We can identify in this design those people who have a virus when more than one virus is circulating, who have one that is closer to what's in the vaccine, and those who are infected with a virus that is more distant from what is in the vaccine.
Finally, moving forward, how should regulators weigh evidence from each of these types of studies to get an accurate understanding of a product's population-level effects?
A lot of the work needs to be based not only on the rigor, but also the feasibility of the design and the ethical considerations. To update a vaccine, it is very difficult, almost impossible, to carry out randomized control trials. And although randomized control trials have the greatest rigor, they don't give us all of the answers. Just as an example, the rotavirus vaccines, which prevent early infection in childhood, was lower in efficacy when they went to less developed countries than it was in the U.S. But they found in observational studies that even though it looked less effective for a number of reasons, such as co-infection with other viruses and things like that, it really prevented severe outcomes. And you can't look at these severe outcomes in a randomized control trial because they're less frequent in occurrence. So you have to choose what your goal is, what your limitations are, and carry out the studies that are best for the circumstance. And not dismiss studies because of the design. You just have to interpret them appropriately.
Thank you, Dr. Monto.